And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Supper time! Yes, it's supper time! Oh, it's supper time! Very best time of day! Supper time! Oh, it's supper time, and when supper time comes, get supper big far away. Bring on the soup dish, bring on the cup, bring on the bacon and fill me up, cause it's supper time. Yeah!
Woo! We're having a little barbecue here at the Horror Vault in honor of today's movie, Cannibal Holocaust. We have some mock turtle soup, some chilled monkey brains, and, oh, a stew of documentary filmmakers. Oh, it's gonna be a good one, and remember, a lot of animals were harmed in the making of this film. Soup's on!
Ciao, Limi and Ichi, and welcome back once again to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Mr. Luke Giaconetti. And today, joining us in the vault is the usual gang of freaks. Up first, the man who has a very strange wound on his leg that he doesn't want to talk about, Mr. Hair Metal Hero Chris Tyler.
Did you ever notice that people taste surprisingly like chicken palm?
Yeah, if you fry them right.
Yes.
And a man
double,
who...
Double dredged.
Got to double dredge it. And then a man who up very recently had a rather disturbing encounter with a mongoose, my good friend Mr. Sean Engel.
It's called a Kalatamundi. A Kalatamundi.
Kayatamundi? From
yes.
Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
The penis head guy?
No, that's...
Yeah. And speaking of penises, the man who had an unfortunate incident involving his penis he doesn't want to talk about, my good friend Mr. Chris Honeywell.
Mingo! Why do people that taste so good have to be so bad for you?
It's the riddle of Cannibal Holocaust, and that's what we're watching today. The last film in our Italian series is Ruggero Deodato's. I hesitate to use the word masterpiece, but you know, it's pretty much the best cannibal film ever made, and I'm just talking about Cannibal Holocaust, released in 1980. And this is far and away the most controversial film we've watched. This may be the most controversial film we've ever watched on the Two True Freaks Network. I can't think of another film.
Serbian film.
Serbian film's up there too. But as far as historically speaking, from a controversy mm-hmm. standpoint,
well,
this
Honeywell
one is
did watch
way up
the
there.
Room. So
yeah, that is pretty bad.
That's a Holocaust all on its own.
Yeah. But just really quick, for those who may not have been familiar with this film and may not have watched it, and I recognize that a lot of our audience probably chose not to watch this film. Cannibal Holocaust is a precursor of films like The Blair Witch Project and other found footage films, wherein a documentary film crew goes deep into the Amazon to observe the way the cannibal natives live. And their footage is later found by a documentarian who's looking at their footage and is viewing what they were doing. And it's a film that it sounds really simple and it sounds straightforward. And in a lot of ways, some of the setups are identical to certain setups from other cannibal films. And but this goes in totally 180 degree batshit crazy directions almost immediately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, just to get
this
is
definitely the hardest view of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I'd seen it before, so knowing that I had to watch it again, I didn't think it would be as hard as it was. I put it off.
Yeah, it's a tough film, and the cannibal subgenre of Italian horror essentially goes down to two men, Ruggero Deodato and Umberto Lenzi, mm-hmm. and they would trade back and forth, essentially making cannibal films that all had essentially the same setup as this, not specifically the documentary film crew, but the idea of white man going into green hell and then being captured and tortured by the cannibals, but upping their game each time. To the point where they just were topping each other back and forth. Can you top this? And it got to the point where this was pretty much it. You couldn't. This was the primo cannibal film. You could not get beyond this. And
pretty much all the ones that came after this were a serious step backwards too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even Cannibal Pharaoh, which was Lenzi's kind of ultimate cannibal film, is similar to this in a lot of ways. Has some similar scenes of gore, but. The truly disturbing parts of this film are not so much the gore, it's the not only the implications of what the film crew is doing, which is a very kind of disturbing from a psychological aspect, but this film is also notorious for a large use of Mondo, with the actual killing on screen of animals for the purpose of killing them on screen. Mm-hmm. And that makes it very difficult to watch, and that's really kind of stomach churning.
It's meta Mondo, because they're making their Mondo film.
Yeah.
Of doing something for, but yeah, the animal deaths that we were discussing those before the show, it's really hard. And this is like one of those few of two movies so far that I've talked about in all the horrible movies of media masochists and stuff. There are two movies that I always say that I don't say, oh, go ahead, you know, don't be a wimp, you know, but this one, even. Hardcore, I've, you know, whatever, I'll watch all kinds of gore, but when they're really killing animals, that viscerally pisses me off.
Yeah, it profoundly bothered me.
Yeah.
Profoundly.
But again, I literally want to reach through the screen and kill not, and we were discussing this before, not the director, although, you know, intellectually, it should be the director I want to kill. But it's such a visceral at the moment of seeing it that it's like seeing the people who are doing it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just...
Because they were still going through with it.
Yeah.
You know, Deodato said it and he shot it, but at the same time, they could have said no, you know, to do it. Especially, and again, I'm not going to get into graphic detail here, but, you know, there are two monkeys that are killed, for instance. Now, those monkeys were both eaten by the indigenous cast members. So, yes, they killed the monkeys on screen. Yes, it was rather gruesome. But at the end, to me, that is at least it wasn't being... They were still...
Monkeys get eaten all the
monkeys
time.
Monkeys get eaten in South America. I mean, monkey brains is a delicacy.
It would
you know,
be like
Temple
something
of Doom jokes notwithstanding. Yeah, so that one, I can at least understand it a little bit. Even if I don't agree with it, even I think that's disgusting, and they had to shoot it twice because they screwed up shooting it the first time, so two monkeys had to be killed. Okay. But, you know, okay, but understanding that, but getting to things like the turtle, all I'm going to say is the poor turtle, it makes the film incredibly difficult to watch just to sit and watch it, not even considering, like I said, the aspect of the narrative that's disturbing. Just watching the Mondo. And this is not limited, and I don't mean to dump on Deodato, because he wasn't the only one who did Mondo. This is probably the most well-known Mondo film, but I mean, Lenzi did Mondo in his cannibal films. There are other cannibal and zombie films from other directors that involve scenes of Mondo in them. There were whole films that were essentially Mondo of scenes of animals being killed, intercut with, you know, caught footage of people in, you know, being hurt or killed in terrorist attacks or accidents or murders caught on tape or people killing themselves on tape, that kind of thing. And this subculture, as repulsive as it is out there. And for, you know, there's a certain way to look at this from an academic standpoint.
The most well known.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a way to look at this from an academic standpoint of looking at not these films from, you know, from, well, why would somebody shoot this? What was the point of this? What was the implications of this? But, you know, I've never been able to look at these from an academic standpoint. I do my best to do that with film, even just some of the absolute schlock crap that we watch. But I can never abide by Mondo as legitimate intellectual art.
Here's my I think this movie is an I think this is an indictment of Mondo.
Mm-hmm.
I think he hated Mondo, and it's like I think that's why this movie. And I've watched like Cannibal Pharaoh and some of his other movies, and why none of them resonated or were as horrific or felt like as good a movie as this one. I think he really had an axe to grind with this movie. And the thing about Mondo movies is it's a voyeuristic thing. You know, you're seeing, you know, especially it was, you know, the ogreish.com of its day before the internet. And, I mean, we're doing parallels Friday the 13th with the Italian flicks, but talk about, you know, I can't remember what I was going to say now.
Well, you know, you're talking about Diodato's axe to grind against the Mondo, the concept of Mondo and the Mondo movement. I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know what I was going to say. Talk about your geek show. This is, you know, Mondo movies are your boiled down geek show. They're a mixture of fake real footage and stuff that's trumped up or whatever. Anything to make it, you know, crazy stuff from around the world. Yeah. And it always has that sort of, you know, this is a documentary of just the weird stuff you don't see across the world, which is just an excuse to see the horrifying stuff. And I think he hated the sort of safety of the voyeurism of those movies. And he calls out the audience in this one.
So yeah. You think
the Mondo scenes are not just a scene of the animals getting killed, it's a scene of people filming like Mondo filmmakers making the movie, and you see those people reacting horror, you know, they're having a hard time doing, you know.
Well, some of them are, you know, that's the thing. Alan, Faye is shown to be affected. Faye, the one female in the group, is shown to be affected very negatively.
Yeah, but Alan, I think that was a real reaction. Care. I don't think it was just great acting. I think that was at the moment. And at that point, you're in when you're watching that, you feel like you're a part of it.
Yeah.
And not just like because the movie has sucked you in. It's because you're like, oh my God, I sought this movie out and they did this horrible thing in it and now I'm watching it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he meant to rub your face in that.
Yeah. And Diodato has gone on in later years and saying that, in fact, his quote was, I was stupid to introduce animals and condemned using Mondo.
That might have been after years of condemnation, but and after not being as angry, getting his anger out in this movie.
No, I mean that was in the 2000s that he said this stuff, and again, it's understandable.
I think it's for what this movie says and what it does. I hate it. I think it was what made the movie what it is.
Yeah,
which is, it's not a. That's the thing. It's like a Serbian tale. It's not badly written. It's not badly acted. Although some of the acting is better than others.
Yeah.
But the main characters who are in, you know, in the found footage, are pretty convincing as soulless assholes. Mm-hmm. And you know, the bad acting comes with the people sitting in the movies theater watching footage.
Although I do have to say, that's a pretty sweet screening room they got there.
Yeah.
Rich Corinthian leather.
Go ahead.
But boy, it packs a wallop in that. And plus, those animal scenes are graphic and real. And then when you start to get into the human killing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's and, the
which
whole
is
thing.
Very, you know, and filmed in that sort of, you know, of somebody running away with a camera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
very realistic, and people are getting their penises cut off, and women, and you know, the things that happen to the people who have screwed over the cannibals is like horrifying. It's just what they do to everybody is just horrifying. Yeah.
Let me just make one quick statement on Mondo, and then I think we should then table the Mondo discussion and talk about the rest of the film. No, and not because I don't think it's good discussion, but I think if we start, we can probably talk hours about
for 8 hours. Yeah,
the ethical and moral implications of the Mondo. Just really quick, there's a really nice DVD of this film available in the United States that's put out by Grindhouse Releasing. Now, and I mentioned this to the guys off the air and to the listeners out there. If you're interested in Cannibal Holocaust, but the idea of the Mondo really sets your stomach, but you want to see this film, get the Grindhouse Releasing DVD. It has a setup where you can choose to watch the film without the animal cruelty scenes. The animal cruelty scenes don't add directly to the narrative. Nope. So you can still watch the film and see the effects and see the story without having to watch the Mondo. And that, you know, again, that if I have, when I watch this film again, and that's probably in about 5-10 years, like it's been since the last time I watched it, it'll probably be in that method without the Mondo. That's how that's it. Just putting it out there so everybody is aware of that.
The one thing I will say about the Mondo, what it does do is it does set up the viewers feel that the things that aren't actually animal killings throughout the movie are realistic or do have that feel of realism. The especially, I know that Deodato got called out for the impalements.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, you see that after, the film crew came in and raped this one girl, they find her later impaled on a spike in the middle of this sort of swampy marshland. And yeah. People thought that they actually, because you've seen those scenes prior to this, you've seen these actual murders of animals on screen, you're conditioned to think that this is an actual murder of a human on screen.
And yeah. let's not like underplay the genius of the special effects there.
Yeah.
I mean, that instead of doing what your normal Italian movie would have done, which would have had a pasty dummy sort of mock-up of the girl, they had the real girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Naked on a with a
seat on a bicycle seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically on a bicycle seat to be the bottom of the and then with the end of it coming out of her mouth, and she would just tip her head back and stay perfectly still. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of, I mean, the actors really went all out for this movie. But yeah. it's very unsettling. I mean,
oh yeah, and then the beyond that, beyond the visual of this girl impaled on the stick, which is kind of one of the marquee shots of this yeah. film, is the reaction of the crew, because we see Alan, who's the head of the filmmaking crew, and he's looking at her being impaled, and he's smiling, and yeah. Jack, the cameraman, actually says, "Watch it, Alan, I'm shooting."
Yep.
And then
yep.
you see as he drops demeanor, and now he's, oh my God, look at what we found.
This is terrible. Yes.
And it's like, I mean, that alone is like, oh my, I mean, it's infuriating and disgusting. But again, because we've become familiar with Alan and Faye and the rest of the crew through this cinema verite style of filmmaking and the very naturalistic acting, because they're just, you know, they're not acting per se. They're just kind of ad-libbing all their lines for the most part. And it you know, again, it gives it that vermisitude, which a word I can't say right.
Verisimilitude.
Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
That it's now you're looking at it and it starts, your mind starts putting the connections together. Wait a minute, you know, what if this is real? You know, and it's the idea again of the Westerners going in and, oh, let's film these cannibals, but this isn't exciting enough. We got to punch it up a little bit. People want to see some spectacle.
And that's also a theme for a lot of things that people think in the news. Well, people are promoting this or punching this up or making things look more impressive to get more people watching this stuff. You know, people say that about the news media. And there was some part of, I guess, in the film, this crew had filmed over in Cambodia or something during like the Vietnam conflict and had gotten incredible footage over there of these massacres and such things going on there. But a lot of that, they said, was staged as well, that they, you know, had people go into certain areas where they would get killed and, you know, that they're manufacturing this stuff. So there's that idea going on through the film as well, that this isn't really a documentary. It's actual people going out and creating these things
to film it.
Sell a document.
It burned down the village.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is that. I mean, that, you want to talk about something that's not gory in the sense that we normally think about these Italian films as being just, you know, blood soaked.
It's but one just of the most, evil.
Yeah, one of the most absolutely cruel and evil things is they, you know, hurting everyone in and then lighting it on fire. What do they even call it? Oh, it's just a little social surgery is what we're doing here. And they're laughing about it. They're laughing about it while lighting a hut filled with terrified natives who don't speak English on fire to film it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's like that, I mean, again, the cannibalism in this film is there to have something to exploit. But this is so meta in the way that Diodato looks at, like you said, Chris, about the cinema verite, the unflinching eye, the idea of exploitation filmmaking and the rich exploiting the poor for entertainment. It's really much headier than what the basic plot line would suggest.
Oh, and yeah. I mean, this is really, there's exploitation movies, and there was a snuff. There was supposed to be a snuff film that was, a horribly filmed bad,
snuff
whatever.
Is freaking awful.
And that's
the only good thing about snuff is it does have one of the greatest taglines of all time: "Made in South America, where life is cheap."
yeah. But that's the thing about this whole sort of stuff. It was all sizzle and no steak. It was all promo and you would come and you'd see some crappy movie. You go into this movie, you get more than you're expecting, and the level of and like the Blair Witch Project, if you saw that cold before all the publicity came out, you'd be like, "What the hell's going on here? Is this real?" You know, and now watching this movie is not quite as savvy as going full realistic, but very few movies go as far as this movie. And I mean, it's so much better than the usual movie of this time. I mean, famously, he had to bring his lead actors into court.
Yeah. Yep.
Prove that they were still alive, because people had watching the and. As a film, and then as all the stuff around it, I guess it's got to be genius. He had to bring people into court because people were just like, "Hey, look, you killed those monkeys."
Yeah.
No,
from a technical standpoint, it looks like a documentary. One of my favorite bits in there is during a lot of scenes where both of the cameramen are both shooting with their handhelds.
Mm-hmm.
There's continuity between the shots because they're they've cut a lot of the footage together. And I love that the guy back in New York says, "Oh, I laid some stock music over it." It's like, okay, why the hell did you do that? But anyway, so again, it's you see the continuity. You see both cameras, and you see as what the one guy is filming, he's picking up the other cameraman what he's filming, and then they cut to that, and you can see the correct angle. So it from a technical standpoint, it's made very tightly.
Yeah, they did it as if they were. Now there's parts of like the sex scene in it. It's like, was there one of the most unerotic sex scenes ever filmed? Yeah.
Well, but it's not really a sex scene. It's a rape scene. And, I don't care. I don't care. You know, I know there's a film called Irreversible where Monica Bellucci, the Italian actress who was, I think she was in The Matrix, who's a very attractive woman. There is supposedly, and I haven't seen this, there's supposedly a 15-minute rape scene.
It's horrible.
And it's you don't, there is nothing gratifying or enjoyable about these sex scenes in there. Everything in this film is meant to.
I wasn't sure if it was a rape or just two really unpleasant people having very
that's how I
gross
read it.
Sex. Yeah, it just seemed like that they both had like, as the viewers did, a horrible distaste for each other, and they were just sort of like burning off energy or some it like the rest of the movie, it leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these
meant to offend.
It's the difference. I think, Sean, you're absolutely right. The movie is meant to offend, but the difference between this film and the one I always pair with it is Cannibal Ferox, is that Cannibal Ferox is meant to offend, but it has nothing to say.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Cannibal Holocaust is meant to offend, but it's meant to offend you on an intellectual level.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and it succeeds because you know, it's not just, oh man, it's a slaughterhouse movie, and they, you know, they stuck a pole through a girl's body, and because they do something very similar to that in Cannibal Ferox with two stakes through a girl's chest, but it's a pretty white girl and we see her breasts. It's like, okay, well, that's a little bit different than what we're doing here. You know, the Lindsay's motivation for that scene is a little bit different than Diodato's point for the pole scene, you know. And but even little things, when their guide gets bitten by the snake and they go to cut his leg off, Alan looks right at the camera and says, "You still filming, right?"
Yeah.
And it's just little things like that. And it's like, I don't know if those were ad libs or if those were, you know, if Diodato said, "Yeah, make sure you mention the camera as much as you can when you're doing something horrible," you know, so we never quite forget that.
Well, that's a common theme, and it's actually a common theme more these days with those found footage movies.
Yeah.
There's usually someone with a camera who's just like, you know, their obsession is making sure they get the shot. Mm-hmm. And at some point, there's usually somebody in the movie who goes, put the camera down, you know.
Yeah, no one says that in this film.
Put the camera down. Yeah, it's not an issue in this. But can I bring up, I can't believe I didn't get a chance to bring this up earlier, that stock music they mentioned.
Yes.
That I think maybe, now that you mentioned it, I never thought of it, maybe it was composed to be sort of sounding like generic stock music, but one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
Yeah.
It's one of the most haunting soundtracks. In some points, it's almost inappropriate. Like, the main theme to it is just very haunting, but kind of tranquil and nice, you know.
It's the very bland sort of, like I said, stock music that we're cutting over this horrific scenes that have been filmed and staged for our entertainment as Westerners.
And then you have the very electronic-y, bloopy, evil music for when the bad stuff is happening.
Yeah.
that music is really cheesy. It's all cheesy.
Yeah.
But boy, somehow it works perfectly and turns up the evil several more notches. It really makes something about it. Makes what you're watching more believable and more horrifying.
Yeah, because it's not like Fabio Fritzi's score to Zombie or The Beyond, which are anthemic and purposefully sounds scary kind of things.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This sounds, if you listen, you play this music for Joe Bloggs on the street who's never seen Cannibal Holocaust, they have no idea. That's like, oh, okay, it's just some pastoral music. You know, it's that disconnect, like you said, between the because normally a score.
Well, this has two flavors. It has pastoral and the inevitable death music.
Yeah.
Plotting inevitable death music. That's just the sound of doom. It's not like for tension. It's just boom.
It's just dissonant.
Boom. You're going to die now.
Oh, you probably.
Alright, I have to ask, how did this thing even get made? And who were those native people? Like, I couldn't be, after I watched it, I'm like, I really don't want to look up anything about this movie. Just because I was not in a good headspace, so it was like,
I believe they were an actual tribe, indigenous tribe.
Yeah, they shot in the jungles of Colombia, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, Diodato had made a film called Jungle Holocaust a couple of years earlier, which was part of, like I said, the ongoing one-upsmanship between him and Umberto Lenzi. And he was contacted by German producers. German producers always seem to have the best ideas, because that's what got the zombie stuff added to The Beyond. And they, you know, so they wanted to make another one, and I guess, you know, and part of it was Diodato was, I think, getting tired of making these movies. So it's like, well, let's go crazy with it. And it's a village, it's set in the jungles of Colombia in South America. He talks about in interviews I've seen where he says that part of the conception of the film was the when talking with his son about terrorism and the way that the terrorism was being covered on the media, and that it didn't necessarily have you know, it wasn't necessarily covering the it's the Red Brigade was a terrorist group in Italy during this time, of what, you know, what the point was, what the political reasoning was, not giving people information. It was just sensationalism. And Sean, you talked about this, that there's a lot of folks that believe that now about the news media, rightly or wrongly, that it's the manufacturing of news to be sensationalism and not be informative. It's news entertainment, as my friend Bob likes to say. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so that was kind of the conception for it. It really kind of hit the zeitgeist. It's one of those topics that still has relevance today, as we've moved even more and more into, you know, the idea of, you know, manufacture the narrative to drive whatever, you know, the agenda you want to drive. You know, this idea of manufacturing slaughter is just, like I said, it's just as relevant today as it was, you know, 35 years ago when in this film. It's hard. It's hard to get around the idea of this because it's such an unpleasant film. Other films we watched in this series are unpleasant to watch, but ultimately they're either enjoyable or they're fun or they're scary. This one, it just makes you feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I haven't said much.
It's one of those films that I think someone may have mentioned it maybe off the air that it's not a film that, you know, when you're flipping through the channels, you see it on, you go, oh, I'd like to watch that, because you can do that with.
You don't even see it flipping through the channels.
Yeah, you don't see it. This is one that you have to actively go search out and you have to find on your own. This isn't one that's like, you know, you call your friends over and, you know, oh, hey, we're going to watch a scary movie. Let's put in this. You know, it's, you know, Friday the 13th, like, you know, the other movies are Phantasm, which we're going to be doing after this. So it's going to be something like this. So this is one of these ones that doesn't just come up and you're right, because it is such a comfortable movie to watch.
I would say watch this movie alone, because it would be one of those movies where. Yeah. At the end of the movie, you stop the DVD and everybody sits there uncomfortably and it's like a bad one night stand and everybody has to walk ashamed out the door.
Right. Yeah. Nope. Yeah. This, you know, and you also run the risk. You don't want to see one of your friends being the guy way too into it either.
He's
like, woohoo, check it out. It's like, oh, okay, I can't hang out with you anymore.
See, I've got friends who actually hunt and they do have to. You know, when they do hunt, they do have to, you know, do things, gut the deer and everything like that. So, but that has a purpose, you know, and you said when we were discussing the Mondo with the, you know, with the monkeys, those get used for the, you know, for the native villagers as food. In this movie, that's not done. So there's a definite, so even for people who are accustomed to doing that kind of thing, this isn't relatable to them. And I think in any way at all.
No, it's totally, they said it's, and that's always been the rub on that sort of thing is, you know, just killing for the purpose of exploitation. Nobody gets behind that, you know? Yeah. And so it's, like I said, it's a difficult film to watch. I think Chris, you hit the nail on the head. This is one you watch alone totally not a date movie. Again, if your girlfriend's into this, you know,
run away.
just saying,
yeah,
but it's one of those ones also, and you're watching it again for almost academia, you know, you're watching it because it's hard to put your finger on it, because
if I was teaching film school, this would be a movie that this would be an important movie in film history, especially for being, if you were talking about movies that were ahead of their time, movies that go someplace that there's lots of transgressive cinema. And there's lots of filmmakers who are like, oh, this guy was really a rebel transgressive filmmaker. This guy really is. And a real transgressive filmmaker is probably not the kind of person you probably like that much, you know? They're doing something ugly. I don't know if it's necessary.
It's not.
But from an art point of view, that's, you know, art isn't done out of necessity. It's done out of impulse or obsession or whatever, and this one does not have it does not have the usual scent of just done for exploitation and money. There's some real anger and
seems to be a point trying to be made with this film. It's not just to put splatter on the screen.
The
point is made. I mean, at the end.
Oh yeah.
It's verbalized. You know.
Yeah, and that's
no way.
Oliver Stone style. Okay. It's not subtle.
No. Yeah, that's I think the most unfortunate thing about this film is that at the end they just have to make that blanket statement of you know who's the monster in this, and we got it.
They said who's the cannibal, but that I mean I think he couldn't resist that line,
mm-hmm. especially in 1980.
Stepping back from it, I think it's kind of a good line. Because it's like, okay, you know, he's making his comments that it's people eating themselves, you know, it's people eating each other, it's society eating itself or whatever. So it's a good analogy, but it's by that point in the movie, it's so redundant.
Yeah.
And it's also delivered in the screening room by the poorly dubbed bad actors. And it's just, but at that point in the movie, you're reeling, you know, anyway. So the stupid ending is just like the stupid ending. It gives you a little chance to be just like, before you start digesting what happened to you and going and showing them on the puppet where the movie touched you.
Yes. And the thing about Diodato is that it's not like he's this. I mean, I don't mean to badmouth him because Diodato's a very talented guy, but it wasn't like all of his films were like this. I mean, he made films that were violent and exploitative for the simple point of being violent and exploitative. Yeah. I mean, after this, he made the film House on the Edge of the Park, which is an extremely just violent, misogynistic exploitation film.
Yeah.
I mean, he made Jungle Holocaust as a standard issue cannibal exploitation film. He made a violent police movies. He also made a couple of like every other Italian director, made a couple of peplums, made a couple of big beefy Hercules movies as well, for you know, just for shits and giggles.
Why not?
So
and money
and money, of course. But you know, it really, I think it speaks to the zeitgeist of when this was made, how you know the decision to shoot it cinema verite, handheld style, everything just comes together for this film. And I'm so and you know, again, I'm not glad from having watched it again, but this is one of those films that, unlike a film like Last House on the Left, I don't particularly like Last House on the Left, but I recognize its importance and why you have to watch it and talk about it when discussing horror films and the revenge cycle and all this other stuff. This is a film that I think it's very well made, but I'll never enjoy watching it. But it's another one that you have to watch it if you're going to seriously talk about not only Italian horror film like we've been doing here for the past year, but also if you're going to talk about the idea of the unblinking eye in horror, of found footage as a genre, a sub-genre of horror. You have to go back to this. I remember when the Blair Witch Project came out, I was in high school, and everybody was losing their mind over, oh my God, this is so original. I said, this is Cannibal Holocaust. And everyone looked at me and said, what the hell are you talking about, Luke? I said, this is Cannibal Holocaust. It's the same idea, but nobody knew what the hell Cannibal Holocaust was. And so now with the film being, you know, DVD has done such wonders for the horror, the horror fan, being able to find these films on DVD, just like pornography. We've always said it. Whatever format's adapted by porno, that's the one that wins, right?
you know it's now a successful subgenre movie because Eli Roth is doing a cannibal.
Yeah. Movie. Well, and Roth has never been shy about the influence of this film on him.
Right.
Rugro Diodato. Rugo Diodato has a cameo in Hostel Part 2. It's actually a really funny bit. If anyone who hasn't seen the Hostel films, they revolve essentially around a club where people pay money to kill other people. Mm-hmm. And Diodato, they come and talk to this grandfatherly old gentleman who's in a room and said, oh, and they talk to him for a little bit, and then they show him slowly cutting somebody up and eating them, I thought was just really hilarious. Wow. But because it just like Lucio Fulci before him, Diodato's this kindly looking old gentleman, you know, wouldn't give him another look on the street if you saw him.
Have a little gabagoo.
Yeah. Oh,
Jesus.
But no, the found footage.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to say, surprisingly, you don't actually see much cannibalism in the movie.
No.
No.
Yeah.
You see the cannibals kill a few people.
Yeah, I think there's really only like one scene of like, yeah, this person's clearly chewing on a leg bone.
Yeah. You know? I think it's, I mean, you know, it just goes back again to, you know, who are the real cannibals here? When they're on the run from the cannibals still narrating and then and filming Faye getting killed. I mean, that's just depraved.
That was difficult to watch, too.
Yeah.
Everything in this movie was difficult to watch.
Imagine being the director and explaining to the indigenous people what's going to happen here, you know, and how to do it and go, no, do it more like this.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can see that they've been, you know, staged. They're very staged. And some places, when you get a big crowd of people, it looks very realistic. But it's just, once again, adds to the creepiness of it and the ickiness factor.
Yeah. That's really the whole thing. Way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, this. I mean, everybody's dirty in this movie. It just it adds to it.
Well,
I mean,
most movies would either, you know, have you rooting for the, and I guess kinda you're sort of rooting for the cannibals because they're just going about their life when these people come in and start messing with them.
Yeah.
But the things they do are so horrible.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, humanity is a pile of shit. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sorry, I was going to say the eaten people were definitely a pile of shit afterwards.
I was going to say, what was the uplifting Italian film we watched in this series so far?
I guess the girl who knew too much had a happy.
Yeah, you're right.
Was good.
I mean, that was what I wanted to, you know. I mean, that's really, ultimately, we've come that far. We've come from Black Sunday, which was a very sort of traditional gothic film with, you know, ghosts and monsters and that. And now we've come all the way to this, a cinema verite bloodbath, a modernist tale of, you know, who's the real monster? What is civilization? We've come that far from it because in the Italian market, the horror films were allowed to grow and expand and cover different ideas like this because there was a market for it and people made money doing it. And so the ideas of boundaries being pushed and moving into different areas. You know, we watched everything from, like I said, Black Sunday, which was a gothic film. We had a film like The Girl Knew Too Much, which could have been directed by Alfred Hitchcock. You know, we move into something like Kill Baby Kill, which is just creepy and weird and outlandish and, you know, just disturbing from an image standpoint. But even though it wasn't necessarily something that we would stereotypically think of as an Italian film, you know, A Bay of Blood was exactly that. A Bay of Blood invented splatter, the genre the most associated with Italian and European horror. You know, the films of Dario Argento are in a class of their own. You know, watching Profondo Rosso is unlike watching anything else, even something like Suspiria or Tenebrae. All of them work on their own level, and they're all totally different from each other in what they're trying to say and how they're shot. And you know, then Zombie and the Beyond, where Lucio Fulci just totally cuts loose and has fun. You know, I mean, Zombie is not exactly an intelligent movie, but damn, if you don't have fun watching it.
Yeah.
You know, and The Beyond is just, okay, let's just take everything we can and throw it at the camera, shotgun book it style. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, something that's a little more thoughtful and quiet and makes you think and has a big high concept like Short Night of Glass Dolls can fit in there too because you're allowed to say, okay, well, we're still European. We can still have something that's well written. And then you can end it all on something that makes you feel so disgusting and miserable from having watched it. You need to feel the need to take a shower immediately upon finishing it with Cannibal Holocaust.
I actually did.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I closed the computer and it's like, and I am going to go out in the sunshine a bit and get some fresh air. I feel really, really bad right now.
Yeah. Somebody bring me a kitten.
Yep. So, you know, and that really was knife. Yeah.
Oh, stop.
Stop that. We're gonna get calls again.
It's a Kalata Mundi.
But the you know, so ultimately, and I'm glad that we did this, and I know that you know that this has gone on for a bit longer than I had originally anticipated on the series. But I'm glad that we've done it, and I hope that it's helped broaden the listeners' horizons a bit. You know, it's horror movies is not just what you could find at what we used to say what you'd find at Blockbuster, or what you might say what you might find on demand or Redbox right now. There's a whole world of horror beyond what we normally consider as horror here in the United States. You just got to, you know, do a little research, spend a little money if you want, get some guys together and explore and broaden your horizons. And ultimately, that's been my goal with this, is to, you know, open doors to new and different horror experiences beyond, you know, if you don't like the state of horror right now, go find something else. We live in a golden age right now, like I said, between DVD and Blu-ray and online distribution, of being able to see these films that for years were either lost or only available completely hacked to pieces.
A lot of these movies we've watched on here, I've watched on YouTube. Short-Headed Glass Dolls was one of those.
At Bay of Blood is also on YouTube, if you'd like. So, like I said, it's all about expanding your horizons and learning more about horror. Horror is there is no genre, not even science fiction, that is as universally dumped on and loathed by the rank and file populace of this world than horror. Horror is treated like garbage. It's dismissed. It's called names like exploitative or trash. It's accused of being responsible for all sorts of social diseases and ills, when really it's just film. And it's just as worthy as our attention of any other genre of film. And if you just give a little bit of time and effort, you can find yourself experiencing all sorts of crap that you never thought you'd be exposed to. And I mean that, and I mean crap in a beloved way here. Because let's face it, I mean, again, none of these films are going to win Oscars, but they're true definitions of horror, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah, I'm completely satisfied with all these movies, even Cannibal Holocaust. It's hard to say that I'm glad to have watched it from a purely technical point. I'm glad that I watched it. I'm glad that I've seen it. I'm glad that I could say that I did view this movie. Was it enjoyable? Oh, not in the least. But it is one of those things where I can technically see I've seen a horror movie that many people would probably never ever seek out. And I've got to thank you, Luke, for doing this Italian thing. You've expanded my horizon on the different genres and these different types of horror movies. And I've really enjoyed every one of these.
I was going to say, I've appreciated the indoctrination. Not indoctrination, you know what I mean. The
re-education? Yeah.
You'll be re-educated. I've just enjoyed playing around in something that I had no familiarity with. And you know, it's always interesting to look at how different cultures view different genres. It makes me want to actually look out some look up some Italian sci-fi, if there is any such thing.
Oh yeah,
there is.
Yes.
Italian sci-fi is usually really, really cheap and really, really crazy.
What was it an Argento or a Fulci on the Haunted Planet? Or
Haunted Planet was
it's basically Alien in a lot of ways.
Oh, no, see, now you say that, and I have to see an Italian version of Alien. That sounds amazing.
It's not what you'd expect. It's bizarre, but it's there. It's Italian. It's Italian.
It's Italian.
Everybody loves Italian.
I gotta say, and as a huge John Carpenter fan, and that being sort of, I think, my idea, or just as his hometown boy, I think this was my favorite run of the vault so far, because I've always wanted to look into those movies, but never had a guide. And by necessity, with the show, Luke, you became the guide. So I had somebody to say, here, watch this. Now watch this, and put some, you know, connect the dots with them. And, you know, now I'm there's all kinds of varying quality Italian horror movies on YouTube, and I keep finding. I just found a Dario Argento one with starring Donald Pleasance
and Jennifer Connelly.
And he has
It's called, the film's called Phenomenon, also known as Creepers, starring Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, that's right, and Jennifer Connelly in it.
And it's got on the soundtrack is Motorhead and Iron Maiden.
Yes, and Goblet.
And Goblin, yes.
There's a whole slew of other great metal and synth-y bands on that soundtrack.
I remember watching that film for the first time. My friend John, who is a huge heavy metal fan, in the opening credits it says including music by Iron Maiden and Motorhead. And John goes, "I bet you dollars to donuts, it's the Ace of Spades. It's a song by Motorhead." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I bet you it's Flash of the Blade by Iron Maiden." And we were right on both accounts.
What a weird pick for an Iron Maiden tune to use, though.
Well, Flash of the Blade is just, and it doesn't. It's just for the title.
I could see him looking through Iron Man going, aha, that Flash of the Blade is a very Argento.
It's not even about that.
No, it's about a guy going and finding revenge against his family, so.
But, in a costume. Yeah, but I'm finding myself, you know, now actively seeking it out. So I'm psyched, and I would like to every once in a while in the future maybe drop another one in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, you got, well, Chris, you may remember the original list for this was about twice as long.
Yeah.
So yeah, and for the sake of everyone's sanity, we cut it down a bit.
It keeps DiMonzo happy with the show, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yep.
Yes it does.
Well, yeah, here I, yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I'm glad we've done it. I hope that the listeners have enjoyed it. We've gotten some good feedback, more so from the Bava films than anything else. I think a lot of folks weren't expecting to start where it starts with Mario Bava's kind of almost low key sort of approach to the horror genre, which I just love. But we've gotten some good response also from Argento stuff and Fulci, of course. I'll be interested to hear if anybody out there actually watched Cannibal Holocaust in preparation for this one.
I think this show is – I think, like, this run of the show will garner more listens as time goes on because it's the kind of thing where, say, when I think of it from my point of view, if I came and saw a list of all our podcasts – you know, there immediately there would be movies that jumped out like, oh, The Thing, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing. I want to see that, you know. So, you know, that's the sort of stuff that people are going to. But yeah, after a while, you'll start running out of stuff like that and be like, oh, I'll go a little Italian here.
But that's also the other thing. You know, everyone, pretty much anyone can go talk about The Thing or talk about Halloween or talk about, Friday the 13th. It's a very limited number of people who will go do Short Night of Glass Dolls or do even Suspiria, I would think, would be a lesser film in people's, wheelhouse to take a look
also
at. So the fact that we did that is, I think is a testament to us wanting to cover, the depth and breadth of all horror.
And the thing is, there's a lot of people who are really into these movies and know an awful lot of it about them. And I imagine our show might not appeal as much to them. I think we're more aimed at people who are not quite as that's three quarters of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also the show in general was aimed more at geeks to dabble into horror.
Yes.
Geeks who
are
interested in horror, not so much the hardcore.
To hardcore horror fans, almost everything we've done is pretty much elementary, Oh, they did Cannibal Holocaust. How cute. How long was the show? It was under 5 hours. Oh, that's so sweet.
They really just skimmed the surface.
They were horrified by outraged by the animal deaths. Oh, buck up, little campers.
It's a big jump though when you go from fake eyeballs getting gouged out, and to
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. And also I shouldn't say that because. I read a lot of like blogs and stuff by the hardcore horror people, and Cannibal Holocaust has the same effect on everybody, just to varying degrees. But even the people who are like hardcore, nothing phases me. It usually bludgeons them quite a bit. It's a good way to go out with a bludgeon.
Yep. That's we're nothing if not bludgeoning here on the vault.
And so, just as a little explanation, going on parallel to this, we're still continuing on with the Friday the 13th franchise, a franchise with real legs, man. Big old long stridey legs that can carry Jason all over the place.
That's right.
From either side of a person to another in mere seconds. But so now that the Italian section's done, we're getting into, this is more like Heroes and My Pet.
Yes.
pet project that we will name it George and hug it and pet it and pat it. And that is the Phantasm films.
Nice.
Which is not going to be quite as long as John Carpenter or the Italian films.
Well, that's just by, you know, definition. There's not as many of them.
There's not that many of them.
So there's, are there four so far, or has there been a fifth? Because I know that there was the fourth one, which was Oblivion.
I think that's the last one, isn't it?
Yep, okay. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay. Yeah, there were four, and there's a fifth on the way, announced. There's a trailer that looks like it's very early footage, if not even real footage. It might be just like footage that they threw together to raise up the, you know, in the meantime with it. But yeah, there's another one coming with the cast, with Reggie Bannister, and just to change topic a little bit, I think we're living in a golden age of genre movies.
Oh yeah.
There's just so much good stuff coming out. The day we recorded this, the new Mad Max trailer came out, and I had to clean my reproductive matter off the ceiling. As a matter of fact, I'm still like kind of like I expecting to get a drop
dripping down.
Oh.
Drip, drop, dripping, baby. Well,
and
I mean,
every movie that I've gone to see this summer has been a winner. And I think we're living in an age comparable for genre movies to the 80s.
Yep, I agree with that.
And I'm kind of psyched, though. And it would be really cool if, like, our Phantasm, you know, timed out with the release of the new Phantasm movie.
You never know.
We could always throw in a few more Coscarelli movies just to...
Oh, yeah. Just to,
Baba Ho.
You and I sort of did... We sort of did a review of John Dies in the End, but it was more just like a quick review. We just saw it. But then there's Baba Hotep.
Baba Hotep.
We have to cover that.
Classic.
Yeah, well, having said all this stuff about reproductive matter on there and all that, I know it's going to sound terrible, but I'm pretty freaking hungry. I got to eat something.
Do you have any fava beans and a nice Chianti?
All right, that was perfect, Hero.
You know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rube.
Well, scrapped.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."
Oh, do you ever get one of those shits that's like, it's so spiky and so bad, it feels like a pine cone coming out of your ass the wrong way?
Yeah, then you're bleeding afterwards.
Oh, Christ, those are the worst.
Yeah, we all been there. Some more than others, apparently.